try to kill us, but my village too strong. Long live the people. Here we go again with the bullshit you want. Long live the people.
We have all these mixed blood people over across the country. We cannot exclude them.
There's nothing wrong with being Red River Métis.
We are all Métis.
There was an attempt to define Métis. And we said no.
There's Métis from Red River. What's wrong with Métis from someplace else? And they were also Métis people.
Uniting our people is at a very sad state.
We are all Métis.
Welcome to The Jig Is Up. Tonight's episode, we have a great guest on the show for you. His name is Joe Pimlott. And some of you here in Alberta may know Joe if you've been involved in Métis stuff at all, especially with the Métis Nation of Alberta. He was involved in their political structure for quite a number of years and then kind of got out of it, and he has future plans to go back. So we thought we'd have him on the show. I know Joe personally. I consider him probably a good friend. He's a really nice guy. He does a lot for the community, and on that side of things, I think, you know, it's phenomenal to have somebody like him on the show. And I know some of you are going to be saying, well, wait a minute, this guy's going to be going back into politics with the Métis Nation of Alberta. You know, what is he doing on The Jig Is Up? And the truth is I think we can, you know, make a clear distinction between the people and the organization. You know, I know that a lot of things in this country right now in politics are very polarized. You know, conservatives hate liberals and liberals hate conservatives and everybody hates the NDP and nobody can get along. But the truth is, I think there's really good people in all those parties that would really love to see their party be more than what they are or what they have been. And I think Joe is one of those guys. I think Joe understands that there's a lot of politics that goes on in the world. But the truth is he wants to see Métis people and Métis communities do better and be stronger. And I think that's something that should be talked about and should be brought on the show. You know, we provide a nice opposition voice to the Métis Nation of Alberta and the cartel organizations. But the truth is it's really a critique on how they're operating and how they're run and perhaps their leadership. So with that said, I'm so glad that Joe came on the show and was willing to be part of the show. And I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. And here's Joe Pimlott.
Long live the king.
All right. Well, I'd like to welcome to the show Joe Pimlott. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to have you on the show because you, I think, you're going to be running for election here in Region 3 for the Métis Nation of Alberta. And so I thought, well, I know you've been involved in Métis politics in the past, and I think it'd be kind of cool to get you on the show and just hear a little bit about your story. So why don't we start, like, where were you born and growing up? Where'd you grow up?
Absolutely. That's it's actually quite interesting. So I grew up the first portion of my years on Vancouver Island. I was born in Comox and grew up in the small town of Courtney, which is right beside it. And my parents split at a young age. So myself and my younger brother went with my mom, and my dad kept my two oldest, and we went on our way. So we traveled around quite extensively, I think, up to Dawson Creek, Ottawa, you know, Calgary, of course. We ended up here when I became a teenager, and we've pretty much been here since then. So it's been roughly around 30 odd years since we've been stable in the Calgary area.
Do you miss the island life at all, or do you remember much about it? Or
I do. You know, that's funny. Growing up, you always have those specific fond memories that just jolt in your mind, and it brings back a warm feeling. And every time I have wind brushed through my hair, you know, or something like that, it reminds me of the wind from the ocean, or just going and swimming in the outdoor pool, you know, back in the day. It's quite fascinating. I think that it's definitely a different atmosphere out there. It's quite different than Alberta. I do miss it a lot. We went and visited there just this summer, and I was able to take my wife and We went and cruised, and I showed her, you know, where I went to elementary school, stuff like that. Went out to Tofino and Victoria, and, you know, really had a good time. Climbed some mountains because I'm heavily into that. So, yeah, it was pretty fun. So, yeah, I definitely miss it, but this is where home is, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you, yeah, like you said, you've been here quite a while, so. So do you have a lot of family back there still when you went and visited? Is there... Was it kind of a bit of a reunion, or did everybody kind of dissipate out?
No, you know what? I have, on both sides of my family, they're all over the place. On my dad's side, they're primarily on the island, you know, a lot of them, because they're all from the England area, and they ended up immigrating back in the day to primarily Vancouver Island. And then a lot of my mom's side are on the mainland, which is kind of weird. So really, we have tons of family in the BC area, and they've just immigrated, I guess is a really good term, throughout. So when we went there, it was no problem. We got to visit virtually everybody we could.
Right on. Right on. And so when you said you were growing up here in Calgary, and so what did you always grow up knowing you were Métis, or was this something that you kind of was told to you later in life, or how did that... How was that?
So, interesting. So, when I was growing up, I knew that we had some form of Indigenous ancestry, but it wasn't talked about at all. Yeah. You know, if we looked at my grandfather, we knew that he had some serious Aboriginal blood going on through there. But we didn't talk about it. And, I mean, being a teenager, out of sight, out of mind, we didn't really associate a lot with the Métis community, the Aboriginal community. I had tons of friends that were Aboriginal, but I didn't really know what to necessarily call myself.
Yeah.
So I left it alone. And then throughout my my 20s and whatnot, it's pretty much the same thing, having a young family, just focusing on work and, you know, putting bread on the table, didn't really think about it until I got into my 30s. And it was actually my mom that broke the silence when she decided she was going to get her Métis card for Alberta.
Oh, okay.
That's when the wheels started to turn, and I started to do research, and I ended up getting my card right when my mom got hers. So literally right then, it was probably, you know, I don't know the exact date, but it was, I want to say 2006, 2007, really. So it hasn't been that long.
Oh, okay. Wow. And
yeah, it's...
Did it seem to connect with you? Like, did you feel, being so late in life, did you kind of feel like a piece of you had finally fit now? Or how did that feel when you finally realized, hey, I'm Métis? Well,
yeah, it's fascinating because, I mean, really, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we all continuously learn. One of the things that I realized was all of my friends growing up, you know, the majority were either Métis or the First Nations, or they had some component to them that there was a reason why I was drawn to them. Yeah. And vice versa, because we had similar concerns, issues, you know, subconscious stuff growing up. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
So now, going back, I'm seeing a lot of my friends that are saying, hey, guess what? I'm Métis. Really? I had no idea because it wasn't discussed. It wasn't thought of. It wasn't in conversation back then.
Mm-hmm.
So now I get to learn a lot about my family history. I'm so excited, so into genealogy now and family history and, you know, who you're related to, because I think that's the big thing in an Aboriginal culture, who you're related to. You know, it's kind of neat. I mean, it doesn't necessarily define who we are, but it kind of sets us on the path of, okay, well, I've got so-and-so in my family tree. They did some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I'm destined to do the same thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I found for myself it was... I don't know. I just kind of felt like a piece finally shifted into place, you know, like my family was always a rumor, but, so when I finally figured it out, it would seem like now everything fit and I seem to make better sense of myself. I don't know.
No, and I completely agree. It's funny because now my family, even my aunts and my uncles and all that, they look at me as the historian now. I'm the one that's responsible. I'm the one that got all my grandfather's stuff when he passed away. I'm the one that got all my mom's stuff when she passed away. So I'm the one that's the knowledge keeper, the one that's taking care of all of those years of history. You know, it's neat because I've got, I think, my great-great-grandmother's sash.
Oh, wow.
It's super duper old. It's very fragile, but I was the one that was bestowed upon it because I'm the one that's trying to continue on that legacy that wasn't there that long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got my own kids and my own grandchildren, and I want to make sure that they know who they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think that's the most important thing.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Well, that was my motivation for really looking into it and, you know, finally deciding to either prove it or disprove it, was when I had my daughter and realizing, well, I want her to know who she is. Now, with your kids, obviously they were already born and they were already getting, you know, a certain age before you really made this connection. How did they feel or how did they react to it?
Well, I think just like me, they kind of knew something was up, something was going on, you know. Dad's losing his mind on on genealogy now, and all this, all the beads and all the stuff is coming into the house. So something's got to be happening.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, when I found out initially, my kids were quite young, and they're in their 20s now, and they're really starting to embrace it.
Yeah.
As their culture, but they really still aren't 100% sure how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they didn't grow up knowing that traditional culture, that traditional lifestyle. Because we live in the city, a large city, it's a little more difficult to be able to embrace that because of all the other issues and all the other stuff going on within the city.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a real struggle with a lot of Métis right now. I mean, you know, I go through the same thing as, you know, how do you connect to the land? How do you, you know... How do you really live that, those kinds of, or relive those traditions when you're in the city and it's go, 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 and you got to work and you know, stuff like that. So it's difficult for sure.
It's not easy. I mean, it's great. We have Google or we have Wikipedia or we have all these really good search engines online. But to be fair, unless you're physically doing it, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, you do have to live it at some point.
You do. And in an urban setting, it's a little more difficult, you know, and with our younger generation growing up quite rapidly, especially with the way social media is and with the way that technology is, you know, we're going to become the seniors pretty quick. And it's up to us to be able to pass that information along to them correctly and in enough time that they can do the same thing, you know, regurgitate it to their children and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
And if we don't, we're going to lose a lot, you know, especially in a larger city. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tough. But I mean, I think we do have a lot of people that are very, very emotional about it, very passionate about their culture. You know, the Métis culture is quite neat. It's fascinating because when I talk about it to people, they're like, well, what does that mean? And when you explain the coming together of two peoples, it sounds a lot cooler speaking it than just keeping it in your mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love explaining it to people because I think that there's a lot of folks, you know, newcomers and so on and so forth that really don't understand who we are as a people. They only get what is in social media or what's on the web, but they don't really get from an individual, you know, the Métis Nation of Alberta or BC or who on, so on and so forth, or even the Glenbow, you know.
Yeah.
And if we're not talking about it, then it just goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you went on to kind of get heavily involved into, I guess, the Métis politics and Métis world by because you actually were part of the MNA, but you actually ran and were vice president, I think, for a while or something.
I did. It's actually quite funny. So what happened was, I'll take it back a little bit further to when I actually started with the Métis Nation in general. And it was actually quite by happenstance. So when I got my card, I was super excited. I'm like, okay, I got my card. What do I do with my card? Looking at all the stuff, you know, number one is identity, of course.
Yeah.
That is extremely important. And to me, that is first and foremost, it made me feel really, really good to get that card, to get that identity, and to be able to do those things, think voting and whatnot. And then I find out that there's this wonderful organization called Rupert's Land that can assist with education. So what do? I go and get my event management certification. So not 2 weeks out of college, I get a call from the regional office saying, hey, would you like to come in for an interview? Absolutely. So I go in for an interview and I get hired on as their event coordinator at the Métis Nation Region 3. I was ecstatic. It was probably like the best thing that could ever happen to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I end up doing that for a couple of events. And then, you know, luckily for me, I get hired on as their youth and FASD coordinator. And I worked for 3 years within the office, learning, helping, giving back to the community, getting in touch with the community, and being able to really refine my my history, because it enabled me to do that. So come 2011, I decided, you know what, I want to take this one step further, and I decide to run for office. I ran for regional vice president. And I got to tell you, that was probably the most terrifying thing I had ever done. It was scary. It really was, because it was definitely out of my realm.
Yeah.
I mean, I love community. I love working with community. I think it's probably the best thing you can do. And volunteering, doing anything and everything I possibly could. And I really had a couple of really good mentors back then. And that would have been Ephraim Bouvier and Marlene Lanz.
Yeah.
And I was able to win in 2011. So I got 3 years of really digging into that political component, really being able to do the stuff that I knew I was destined to do.
Mm-hmm.
And come 2014, my term was up and I decided, you know what, I'm going to take it one step further.
Yeah.
I ran provincially. So I became the provincial vice president. I was successful, and I was even more terrified because now you're not just responsible for the region, you're responsible for the province.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, with that, we ended up moving to Edmonton, and we were there for approximately a year and change when, unfortunately, my mom was very ill. And my mom ended up passing away when we were up in Edmonton.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was probably one of the most traumatic things that could have ever happened to me.
Yeah.
We had never been outside of Calgary. The 1 year we decided to move, my mom passes away. And my daughter ends up saying, hey, Dad, guess what? You're going to be a grandpa.
Oh, wow.
So that happens. So my daughter's going to have a baby. My mom passes away. My stepdad is in utter disarray. Like, it's down here in Calgary, could have been the worst thing possible happening for my family.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a very very good heart-to-heart with the president, the Métis Nation of Alberta, Audrey Patra, and we came to terms that the best thing for me would be to step down, because moving back to Calgary and with the way that my family was in just chaos, it would be the best thing for myself and for the MNA as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that is because, you know, in hindsight, I could have moved back and I could have commuted.
Yeah.
But the reality is my family was in such shambles that I wouldn't have been able to do the job, the due diligence that I needed to.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fair to the organization. You know, and I'm so thankful for the people that elected me in, and I'm very sad that the tragedy struck and the chaos ensued and I wasn't able to fulfill my obligations. But unfortunately, you know, that's just the way life goes. And I would do it again in a heartbeat because my family comes before any occupation. And I would suggest that anybody else have that same attitude because a job is a job, but your family is forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So now you, when you moved back to Calgary, like I know you were the director at the Calgary Friendship Center for a while. So I guess tell us a bit about that. I guess that kind of just played off on you delivering programs and working for the community again, right?
Yeah. So there's been so much stuff that's happened in the past couple of years, and it's been very exciting. You know, when I go into something, I go full force.
Yeah.
So when I got back to Calgary, I was able to take over the Aboriginal Friendship Center, and they had been without an ED for a little while. So I was kind of going in there in a green context, but I had a lot of assistance with the staff that were very seasoned, very amazing. And we were looking at new ways to bring people in, bring kids in, because, I mean, kids are life. They are the ones that we do everything for.
Yeah.
And one of the cool programs that I was able to design was this wrestling program.
Oh, okay.
Which were, yeah, it was so cool. So I'm friends with a lot of the Hart family.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, yeah, my friend Smith just passed away due to cancer. And I know Brett's dealing with that too. But I'm friends with, you know, Julie Hart and Matt Hart, you know, so a lot of the Harts. So anyways,
for sure.
What we decided to do is we decided to look at a youth enhancement program that was wrestling related. So we would teach them about leadership skills and calisthenics and, you know, eating healthy and all these different things.
Yeah.
But with a wrestling theme. Because well, I mean, cool. Who doesn't love wrestling when you're a kid, right?
Exactly. It's great entertainment.
Absolutely. So, I mean, long story short, we had, I think, I want to say 15 to 20 kids for 3 months, and we worked with them twice a week.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we had so many more kids coming into the center, and it was wonderful. I mean, we got write-ups. We got the Friendship Center was like front and center, and it was great. We did so much fun stuff. Now, unfortunately, I mean, the dollars that we were able to retain were limited,
yeah.
Which is normal. You know, with not-for-profits, you only get, you know, a certain portion of dollars, and then you have to reapply. But if the dollars aren't there, the dollars aren't there.
Yeah, that's right.
So we did a bunch of stuff with the kids there, and we also had programs that were pre-existing before I even got there, like the traditional naming ceremony. Which taught people about the cultures of the Indigenous peoples of the area. So we had a couple of elders that worked with my programs coordinator, and that was extremely successful. That is probably the most successful program going at the center, and it's still going now.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff really, really peaked. We were able to increase our bottom line by a ridiculous amount of money when I was there. And then May of last year, the Friendship Center and myself parted ways. And I decided to take a bit of time off for myself because I'd been working for, you know, pretty much 10 years straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just needed some time. So within that time frame of being at the center, I got a couple of really cool awards, and I like to talk about myself sometimes, but I don't.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I don't feel like I deserve it.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the cool things that happened was in, I guess both of them were in 2016. So in 2016, I received the Alberta Aboriginal Role Model Award in leadership. Or no, sorry, not leadership, volunteerism, see?
Oh, wow.
Well, volunteerism. That's awesome. I don't know why I said leadership, but, you know.
Well, I can definitely see the volunteer thing. I mean, everywhere I go, I see you at every single event volunteering.
Absolutely. Well, that's so important to give back, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, with all the extracurricular stuff that I do, it's so important to be able to give back to your community in so many different areas.
Yeah.
One of the other neat things that I got was in honestly, I don't even remember the month. It might have been November 2016. I was featured with five other college grads as the college all-stars in McLean's magazine.
Oh, wow.
Not a lot of people know about this, but that would have been the issue when Trump got in and his face was on McLean's magazine. So if you flip it ahead a little bit I think the middle pages, if you can get your hands on that, there's Joe's face with a little write-up.
That guy had to steal your thunder, eh?
Yeah, it was the hair. He had the hair.
Yeah, what can you do, right?
That's right. But, I mean, it's small things like that. I mean, it's not really small, but it's those gestures from the general public that acknowledge a lot of the work that we do. And, I mean, I'm not alone. There's so many people that do similar and the same stuff that I do that don't get the recognition that I've got. But I think because, personally, I'm such a go-getter and I'm so community-oriented, I think that I stand out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, like I said, I see you at everything because you volunteer not even just with Métis things. You're always volunteering with community associations and Stampede things and things like that. So, we talked a little bit about you going back into the MNA and running for election next year. What made you decide to do that? Was there a specific reason? Did you think, was it just kind of a logical next step, or was it something you think is missing or that you could offer?
Oh, all of the above.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. I do a lot of stuff in the community. I mean, I sit on boards and committees all over the place between my community center, the Métis local. I sit on community boards for the Indigenous Gathering Place. I'm a Shriner, so I'm always in parades.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always, flying the little planes and stuff.
Yeah.
And my motto is you only live once, so why not do as much as you possibly can with the time that you have?
Absolutely, yeah.
And one of the things, when my mom was still around, and I'm so thankful that she got to see me get into the Métis Nation as the provincial VP, she was able to come up. We brought her up with a wheelchair and whatnot, and that was a very, very touching thing for me. One of the things that we had discussed was that after that, I would run regionally, which was the initial game plan for me, was running for regional president because my family's down here. It made sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My contacts are down here. My friends are down here. My family's down here. My Métis Nation Region 3 is down here.
Yeah.
And my kids have been a real catalyst with telling me that I truly need to pursue that and fulfill that obligation, not only to myself or my mom, but to the community that I've worked so hard for the past 8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
My view is that I didn't want to leave, but it was something that was necessary that I had to do at the time. So I've got a lot of unfinished business within the region.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do see is that there definitely needs to be a shift. There needs to be a change in ideas, a change in concepts. And we really need to bring a lot of the community, I don't want to say back to the region because they're already here.
Yeah.
It's just bringing the community together.
Yeah.
There needs to be a lot more stuff happening, I think. And I think with new ideas from individuals that may not have had a voice before. And, I mean, believe you me, I can talk to virtually anyone. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, I'll get on the phone and I'll talk to the person that literally just got their card and say, hey, what are you doing? What do you want to do? Would mm-hmm. you like to set up a group? Would you like to set up a work with a program? Would you like to do so many different things? Because with the way things are going with the governments and with their need to communicate and collaborate and start working with us in a deeper context, you know, hopefully there's going to be more dollars for youth. Hopefully there's going to be more dollars, you know, for our seniors and our elders. But also, hopefully there's going to be stuff for, you know, the middle, you know, like us.
Yeah, the families and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so one of my goals is to bring unity, you know, back to the region.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of hard to explain. It really is, because there's a lot of stuff that does happen within the region. But I think personally, with a new thought pattern, there can be so much more.
Well, I think it's always important to, you know, to get fresh blood. I mean, you look at all of the councillors that just got reelected on Calgary City Council. And this was supposed to be the big election for change, and although there wasn't a whole lot of change. But that was kind of the underlying theme, is that, you know, some of these people have been there for, you know, one guy's 24 years, other people are 15 years, and it's time for new ideas.
Right. And that's one of my big things. You know, I don't believe that when I get elected in that I'm going to be there for 3, 4, 5 terms, because I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah.
What I think is that I need to do my share in contributing to society, to the Métis Nation, to the people that are looking for that guidance or that leadership. And then set up the next generation to lead.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, you start to become a little, what's the word I'm looking for?
Complacent.
You start to lose ideas. Yeah, complacent ideas or concepts. I mean, you can only connect to the younger generation for so long.
Yeah.
Before you don't know what a Google Map is or a blog is or... You know what I mean? Like, you need to be able to set up the next generation to succeed. And that's my goal, is I'd like to do one term, possibly two, depending on who's waiting in the wind.
Yeah.
Because I don't see it as a job. I see it as a guide for that next generation.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm the same as you. I see that as anything like that has got to be, okay, what can I do for however long the next two terms is to get the next generation up and going?
Right.
And I mean, even honestly, running like a leadership program so that you can teach the younger generation to take over for you. I mean, at the end of the day, at some point in time, you're not going to be in that position anymore.
That's right.
You know,
so you have to set it up for that next individual, the next group of individuals.
Yeah.
You know, the trick is that, and because I've been there, because I've actually had positions similar to this, I know what to expect. You're dealing with your other regions, the other provinces, and of course your provincial and federal government. So you never know where your funding is going to come from. You never know who's going to be in leadership on the other end. So, and you never know what court cases are going to transpire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everything is always up in the air, but you have to have somebody in there that is willing to take those risks, that's willing to take the plunge, and is willing to allow everybody to participate.
Yes.
And I think that's the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, we need to make sure that, we're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to run every program wondering, well, what is the outcome of this program? What do we want to have happen?
What are the next steps? What could this transfer into something else?
Yeah, exactly.
Or with, you know, with our youth groups or our youth programs, you know, with our locals or whatever, they're going to grow up. They're going to get older. So are we prepared to start looking at modifying programs and services, you know, in conjunction with previous, to retain those kids?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that stuff doesn't really happen, because people are just focused on just getting initial dollars for one program or whatever it may be. They're not looking at long term. They're not looking at the future of those individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, that's good to hear. I mean, that's great things if you do run, and I have no doubts that you'll probably win. I mean, I can't imagine you not. You, with the way you attack everything else, I'm sure that you'll.
Well, I'm surprised I'm awake right now. My goal is to do what I need to do, stay connected in the community, and take the bull by the horns, so to speak, in September and secure my position as president of the region.
Well, I really appreciate you being on here, and I wish you good luck with that. I hope that I definitely hope you achieve success on that. Although, like I said, you attack everything with such enthusiasm, I think there's no doubt in my mind you'll be successful.
Absolutely.
And I think one of these days I'd love to have you back on the show to just talk about, I guess, more politics and governance and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think one of the important things that I learned when I was in politics is you have to have really good leadership and really good mentors in order to learn from. And yeah. Luckily for me, I had those individuals that were able to teach me what they know, and I was able to expand out. So all of my my community leaders and my M&A leadership have done me a great service with teaching me everything that I needed to know and everything that I'm going to need to know going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, I wish you the best of luck, and I really want to thank you for coming on today. I don't know if there's any last words of advice or little bits of wisdom that you'd like to share with us before we finish off here.
Absolutely. Never give up. Chase your dreams. Make sure you have goals, and if you don't, start making some, because you're not going to get anywhere without starting with number one.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Joe, for being on. I really appreciate your time. And I will let you get back to the whatever crazy things you got going on.
Oh, you have no idea.
Awesome.
It's
going
to be a long night.
Well, like I said, hopefully we can have you on again another day and just talk more about the politics and the idiosyncrasies of running an organization, perhaps, on the next show.
That would be wonderful.
Awesome, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Long live the king. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation I had with Joe. Joe's one of those guys whose enthusiasm is very contagious. And he always, hanging around with him or being around him, always makes you feel like you should be doing more for your community, your Métis community, or, your local municipal community. So I really want to thank Joe for being on the show. It was a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing him out at the next event we are all at. And for everybody else, if you have any questions or comments about this show or any of the other shows, shoot us an email at metipodcast@gmail.com. If there's any guests that you'd like us to talk to that you want to hear from that are Métis and they're doing cool things or they're out there showing leadership out in the world, shoot us an email again at metipodcast@gmail.com. Drop their name and let us know you'd like to hear about them or learn more about them or hear them on the show. We'd love to have more guests and more suggestions for guests that you guys want to hear. And, as far as next week goes, we'll be back with the two bearded lunatics ranting and raving about politics and Métis life in general. So until then, the jig is up.
Long live the king. Hey, my late cooking came from Kawaka to Express. Real warrior woman, probably Papa Moose dead. It's poor man's if you want to talk the language. 100 clicks north and Varginha's the rest. You still got.